Now for agribusiness news, markets, and weather from Studio C. This is Agriculture Today.
You talked about the Brazilians. They're getting a good enough price signal that they're going to get it in, and they're willing to take that back-end risk on an earlier normal end of the raining season. We already took 1 million metric tons off of our production just because it's a little bit delayed.
Speaking at Commodity Classic in Denver recently, Dr. Seth Meyer, Chief Economist, USDA.
I think absent a production shortfall, the only other thing I see is something I would not wish on anyone, which is more disruptions in the Black Sea. I see that the market seems very calm with the way things are right now, and I look around and I look at the possibility for something bad happening, and I think that's not something I even want to I don't want to consider. So I think again we've got to work through some supplies, and short of a production shortfall someplace, we're going to kind of move around in this area.
You're listening to Agriculture Today.
Pointing out that Mexico, Canada, and China are number one, two, and three. Someone else said that earlier in ag exports for the U.S., but also for corn specifically here.
Krista Swanson is lead economist, National Corn Growers Association.
Mexico, our number one corn destination. Last year, over 40% of our corn went to Mexico. We're on a similar pace track this year. Number five destination for corn is Canada, and China is number eight. But, you know, these destinations aren't just important for our corn, but also the livestock and value-added products and ethanol and DDGs. Canada, over 40% of Canadian. Over 40% of our ethanol exports last year went to Canada. Huge market for Canada, and the potential for retaliation on really any of these does fall back and impact corn as well. And then, you know, just another thing, our what's really important to our organization is demand for corn. And you know, we have the situation when we talk about exports demand, but wanted to hit on a little bit of what we're up against on the domestic front, too. This right here is the Energy Information Administration, EIA's baseline forecast for finished motor gasoline use. And if we look out over the next few decades, in a baseline scenario, finished motor gasoline use is expected to drop. And so if we think about ethanol at a 10% blend and no changes to that, then ethanol drops and corn use for ethanol also drops. What's even more concerning is last spring the EPA put out their tailpipe emissions rule, which would really accelerate that loss in finished motor gas use from the baseline, and again, really detrimental to corn use for ethanol, which right now is about a third of how corn is used. And so, you know, a really important thing to our organization is passing legislation that would allow for higher blends of ethanol to combat some of this loss that we're up against in the future. And real quick, as we close out and maybe set the stage for some of the discussion, I wanted to mention a few of the challenges and opportunities. We already talked about both Seth and Scott mentioned the growing global competition, talked about tariffs, those biofuels limitations, new use barriers. So, you know, we have a number of different things that corn could be used in, but I'll just also note here, you know, some of the barriers to SAF and some of the policy like 45Z that still, you know, needs some work to really have that transparency for farmers and really make that a potential growth opportunity. Farmers are facing high input costs and price volatility, certainly political uncertainty. But I think there are some opportunities. You know, although the current administration does, make use of tariffs, it's also, as we saw in the first Trump administration, trade deals with market access are important to them, too. And so I think that is a potential opportunity. We have more corn and biofuels. There's legislation on the, proposed right now that would allow for year-round permanent E15. We are advocating very hard for that.
Exports are on a good pace, but need to continue.
We don't want to lose any corn demand. I'll just start by saying that, I think losing any is not going to be positive for price. I think where you're going with this, though, is that when we look at the weekly exports so far in this marketing year that started in September, you know, we are on pace to, if we would continue the normal five-year pace from where we are now through the rest of this marketing year, then we would be, above the current projection. I don't have that updated number on the top of my head right now, but I guess from that perspective, you could argue that. But again, especially with everything going on right now, we already have profitability projections to the negative. We don't want to lose any corn demand.
It's Agriculture Today.
Ag News Now. Agriculture Today.
Well, there's a lot of research done in that area, and it's very clear that, you know, if a cow calves, well, let's put it this way, when the condition a cow calves in other words, thin, moderate, or really fleshy, has a really big influence on the postpartum interval and the amount of time it takes for her to start cycling again and then get, you know, get pregnant.
BCS, or body condition scores, for beef cows range from 1 to 9. 1 reflects cows that are emaciated. Score of 9 reflects cows that are obese. Dr. Dave Lallman is Oklahoma State University Extension beef cattle specialist.
That was the main story. And, you know, you don't want to have a bunch of cows calving or going into calving season in thin condition. We recommend a minimum of a 5 on a cow and a body condition score 6 on a heifer, which would be a little bit, you know, above a moderate condition score. So, and that's because the first calf heifers are going to have a longer postpartum interval if they calve as a 2-year-old than a mature cow would have. You know, the longer the postpartum interval, the longer it takes those cows to get bred, the later they'll calve the next season, probably the lighter the weaning weight. So I have a friend, a longtime friend. We have been talking quite a bit about cow efficiency on the phone for quite a few years. His name is Dr. Matt Cherney. He's recently retired, but Dr. Cherney worked for a large ranch in northwest Wyoming. Mm-hmm. In fact, this ranch had about 14,000 cows, so it was a huge operation. And he had the opportunity to look at this relationship of body condition score to reproduction on that big set of cows. And he just has an incredible data set on that topic. And what he found, just like, you know, Dr. Selk had been telling us about for years, what he found was that if the cows that were in a body condition score 3 or less, really thin, mm-hmm. had a pregnancy rate in the low 70s. Mm. Okay? Cows that averaged about a body condition score 4 had a pregnancy rate year in and year out of around 80, low 80s. Okay? Yeah. Cows that calved in body condition score 5, 92-93% pregnancy rate, and then cows that calved in a 6 or greater, about 94-95%. So a little bit better, but not much. You get a really big bump from thin to moderately thin, from a 3 or less to a 4. You get another big bump from a 4 to a moderate condition score to a 5, right? Mm-hmm. About another 10 percentage units. And then from there on, it doesn't really improve that much, a little bit, but it doesn't improve that much. So tremendous impact on their body composition at calving, on their, you know, on their pregnancy rate. Rather than maybe separating them and manage them so they don't have reproductive failure, let them fail, and by doing so over time, you know, you're gradually selecting for fertility, and obviously there's a pretty strong connection or correlation between body condition and pregnancy rate. So yeah, first thing you should probably do if you need to cull, or you should cull the opens. Mm-hmm. Let's start with that. And then if you have the opportunity, maybe in a drought year where you need to back off on your stocking rate a little bit, then maybe cull those thin cows, even if they are pregnant, because they're the ones that are most susceptible and telling you that maybe they're not a great match.
Dr. Dave Lallman, Oklahoma State Extension Beef Cattle Specialist. Learn more online, sunup.okstate.edu. It's Agriculture Today.
With Agriculture Today, here's Tony St. James.
Both SCO and ECO are relatively new policies. ECO came out in 2021. SCO came out in 2015.
Corey Walters is an ag economist with the Nebraska Center for Ag Profitability.
It's a county-level policy where it uses county yields. Remember, your farm uses your APH yields. But price is the same. And for corn right now, as of this morning, our projected price was sitting around $4.72, and our soybean price was sitting around $10.57. To incentivize participation, the government does provide a premium subsidy to lower the cost, the out-of-wallet cost of 65% for ECO and 65% for SCO. Let's talk about the coverage on SCO and ECO. For ECO, you're going to get the band from 86% to 90% or 95%. So up to 9 percentage points there. You go from 86 up to 95. And on SCO, that'll take you up from wherever your individual coverage is up to 86. Now, the liability inside of each one will be different by farm. And that's because you're running off of the APH on the farm, the percent of your yields. So higher APHs imply you have more coverage. Got an example here of for ECO, we have the 9% from 86 up to 95. If you're running off of an APH of 100, then that's 9 bushels. And if you have an APH of 120, that's 10.8 bushels. And I have a graph over here kind of showing, not a graph, but a figure showing where kind of how this thing works and where they stack onto. But that's not entirely what's happening, because the SCO and ECO are using a county yield, and you're insuring on your farm level, you're insuring the farm yield. And so we have to think deeply about what is the relationship between that county yield and that farm yield. And pretty much guarantee you almost all times is going to be quite weak, meaning that you can have all types of different outcomes. Your farm could have a great yield, the county doesn't, and you get a payment. The farm has a good yield, the county has a good yield, everything's good. But the scary one is when the farm does not have a good county yield and the county does. In that case, there would be no payments. So SCO, ECO are not intended to be used to substitute for farm yield risk. You will get a cheaper premium with the SCO, ECO, but particularly the SCO, if you want to substitute your coverage level down and then buy SCO, it's going to cheapen things up. But you are moving away from your farm yield over to your county yield, and that's dangerous. So I'd rather see these things pulled far away, and I'd like to make it even bigger if I could, because they're two separate conversations, whether you want to think about buying SCO, ECO, and your farm level insurance. In a pooled risk environment, such as a drought, you know, there probably is some type of relationship, and it still is likely weak. In the non-pooled risk area, such as hail, wind, then there's definitely weak, really strongly. So buyer beware, understand what you're after when you're buying SCO and ECO for yields.
It's Agriculture Today.
You're listening to Agriculture Today.
I've worked in agricultural banking for 13 years, including the past 2 years as a loan production officer for Dakota Mac.
Caleb Hopkins testifying recently before the Senate Ag Committee.
Before First Dakota National Bank, I worked at a small community bank helping to lead their agricultural lending. Agricultural bankers have a deep appreciation for the important role producers play in our economy and the unique challenges they face. Like many ag bankers, my passion for agriculture goes beyond the bank. I have a herd of cattle, I'm a proud 4-H dad, and I have a crop insurance business with my wife. Our passion for the next generation of producers goes beyond a program or clinic. Fostering the next generation of producers is what we do every day. I appreciate the opportunity to present the views of the bankers at this hearing. Banks continue to be one of the first places that farmers and ranchers use when looking for agricultural loans, and over 80% of the banks in the United States have agriculture in their portfolio. Bankers finance all types of agriculture in every part of the country. Agricultural lending is a good business, and we work with our customers to improve their business, both in the short and long term. I'd like to start today by highlighting the current state of the agricultural economy. I was personally involved in congressional meetings to get economic assistance for farmers and ranchers. The economic assistance that was passed by Congress will provide some relief to our customers, but it still won't be enough for many. For example, soybean acres are expected to have a payment of $30 per acre, but estimates in my area show farmers being short $300 per acre on soybean ground. This is a trend across most commodities. USDA has projected an increase in farm income of 29% due to economic assistance, but input prices are still high due to inflation. At the same time, commodity prices are expected to drop this year. Every region will be affected differently, but it is becoming increasingly apparent that economic assistance will not be enough to cover the shortfalls this year or enhance the long-term health of balance sheets to weather another economically challenging year. This is why bankers are so supportive of a long-term farm bill. Our customers need the certainty that comes with a farm bill, and lenders must operate on knowns, not projections. A long-term farm bill provides certainty to agriculture, which allows for long-term planning. We look forward to working with the Senate Agricultural Committee to develop a new farm bill. ABA does have a list of priorities that bankers would like to see in the next farm bill that I've highlighted in my written testimony. This includes increasing FSA guaranteed and direct loan programs. We thank Senators Hovind and Klobuchar for the PACE Act that creates a model for how this can be achieved. Additionally, changes to eligibility for beginning farmers and ranchers is vital to bringing in the next generation of farmers and ranchers. Bankers are supportive of modernizing reference prices and protecting and enhancing crop, livestock, and dairy insurance programs. Lastly, Farmer Mac is a tremendous partner to the banking industry, and we support efforts to modernize Farmer Mac to meet the modern needs of American agriculture. Beyond the Farm Bill, ABA is looking forward to the tax reform process that is playing out in Congress. Our customers rely on keeping the current estate tax exemptions and capital gain exemptions. The Access to Credit for Our Rural Economy Act, better known as the ACRE Act, is tax legislation that would create a level playing field for all lenders in agriculture. ABA analysis has shown that the ACRE Act would reduce the effective interest rate by up to 1% for qualified borrowers. We thank Senators Moran, King, Tuberville, Gallego, Marshall, and Kramer for sponsoring this vital piece of legislation. The ACRE Act will increase credit availability to rural America while driving down the cost for our borrowers. We believe this is the right solution to help rural America during these tough economic times and as well as in the long term. Farm banks are healthy and continue to be forward-looking, growing capital and increasing reserves.
It's Agriculture Today.
Ag News Now. Agriculture Today.
Looking at revenues from the market for soybeans using USDA numbers.
Scott Gerlt is chief economist with the American Soybean Association.
And you can see, you know, we had a few good years there, 2020, 21, 22. You know, farmers are generally profitable. But then you look at 2024, 2025, and we're seeing a very different story. And quite likely, Seth, you can tell me if I'm completely wrong, but I would guess if you're redoing this today, your soy numbers might look a little bit lower, potentially. If that's the case, you know that 2025 bar is going to be even worse. Now, we do know that the economic assistance package is going to be rolled out, but that's about $30 per acre for soy. So, you know, if you look at total costs, you know, it's about $100 per acre loss at the national level. You know, so that's not making farmers whole. So one thing I want to leave with is how do we manage the risk? There are programs out there to help. And so I'd highly encourage the producers to be looking at this very closely. So one of the things is crop insurance. The crop insurance price setting period was in February. Thankfully, we kind of hit that surge in prices. And that's fixed. That was done as of February 28th. And so that's at a soy price of $10.54 per bushel. Right now, November futures, as of a couple hours ago, we're $10.04. So right now, you've already had a 5% drop. So you're already partway, you know, depending on what your coverage level is. We also know that the enhanced coverage option subsidy rates were increased this year. So it's cheaper to buy up extra protection. So if you're thinking about managing risk, you already know you have $10.50 potentially locked in minus your coverage level and crop insurance. There's also a farm bill option. The PLC reference price this year is going to be $9.66 per bushel. We know that. Right now, kind of the metrics I'm watching for national average cash prices are $9.43. So we don't know what the price will be for the upcoming marketing year, but if we're looking at it today and setting, that would trigger PLC payments likely. If you want to look at ARC, the price component for that, look using the multi-year average, is $12.17 per bushel. There's an 86% coverage level, so that takes it to $10.46. Now your county yield comes into play there, so that can make a difference, but that's one thing to think about too. But on ARC, there's a 10% cap on your payments, and you wouldn't have SEO as an option. And then the last point I want to leave with is manage expectations for a quick trade aid. You know, I think there's an expectation out there that this will happen. You know, that's happened last time. It's been talked about from the administration, you know, going into a trade war. But we don't know truly if, when, or how much, right? All those things are still on the table. And there's also reporting out there that the CCC program from which it's paid out would only have $4 billion left at the end of the fiscal year. I mean, that information isn't public, so it's hard to know for sure. But essentially, if the administration were to do a very large trade aid package, they would likely have to rely on Congress to replenish that fund from which other things are paid out that go to producers. So there's a lot of uncertainty there. So my advice would be, you know, don't be putting all your eggs in the trade aid basket. Be looking at these other programs that you know with certainty.
But how could prices improve without a weather or demand event?
I do think farmers will respond to the market prices, as Krista showed. And so I think there can be there's still some acres on the margins that can come in and out. That can help in balancing some of the supply issues at this point. But beyond that, I think, you know, getting tax credits right for biofuels would be a major help this year. I think keeping trade flowing. I mean, that doesn't get us out of the hole we're in now, but at least it keeps us from digging any deeper. But essentially, the world is flush soybeans at the moment. Brazil is having a very, very strong harvest. So, you know, without a major production shortfall somewhere to offset that, we kind of just have to work through some of the supplies that are in the system.
It's Agriculture Today.
With Agriculture Today, here's Tony St. James.
So with the current projected price of $4.72, your ECO trigger, this is holding yields constant or just letting yields come along, you have a trigger of $4.48.
Corey Walters is an ag economist at the Nebraska Center for Ag Profitability.
This is the current price probability distribution for December futures this fall. So this is, we have December futures sitting around $4.72 here, and that's point A, meaning that this is the range at which prices could end up down here on the bottom. There's a chance they could end up below $3, and there's a chance they could end up above $8. Okay, albeit small. So when we figure out that trigger price of ECO of $4.84, we go up on point B and we go up to that point, hit that red line, the probability, we can see, or the price, the relationship between price and probability, we can see the probability of collecting on an ECO. And that is a 60% chance that prices will end up above that trigger, meaning there's a 40% chance that prices will be below. This is where we come to the first point of the essence of the decision making here. You're not buying these things to get a payment every year. You're buying it to protect yourself from rare events. For the SCO trigger price, you got to go down 86%. And you're sitting there, again, holding yields constant. You're sitting there right above $4. And there is a 78% chance or thereabouts that the fall price will be greater than the SCO. All right. So there's your price protection on SCO and ECO in probability world. Both of them use the county yield. But what is the county yield? And it is not always what you think. And it is generally across the state different for irrigated and non-irrigated practice. But there are exceptions. Even surprising to us, and you need to ask your agent about these things. So we have a few counties over here that are in yellow, and these are counties where there's one yield for both irrigated and non-irrigated. Last week, I had a great discussion with an insurance expert who works for one of the companies of Fieldman, and we went back and forth. He thought he knew why, and by the time we got done discussing it, and digging more into it, he figured out he didn't know why. And it is not due to acres. There's something else going on. Some of these counties have ample number of irrigated acres, and we can find counties that have separate yields for both irrigated and non-irrigated SCO that have substantially fewer acres, okay, in irrigated. So ask your agent. Also, when you ask your agent what those yields are in these counties, ask them, or think about what that yield means. Is that a representative yield? And because that yield level is important. So both corn and soybeans have this same blending effect. Where it's really not blending, it's more like the irrigated went away and they put in non-irrigated. And that doesn't mean that in these counties you shouldn't buy SCO or ECO. All that simply means is if you're in one of these counties and you're buying it, and you have irrigated production, you are essentially going to get a payment when there is a drought, and where because it's under non-irrigated. Where if you're in another county next to it and there's a drought and it has its own irrigated yield, you probably won't get a payment. So it's essentially increasing your payment opportunities, and it'll change your premiums as well. And the county mix between soybean and corn are actually different where they're blended. And this is a fairly new change, and I wouldn't be surprised if there's more changes going forward. So please keep up with the parameters in the program.
It's Agriculture Today.
This is Agriculture Today.
More details revealed about USDA's Emergency Commodity Assistance Program. Economic relief assistance for producers scheduled to start with sign-up next week.
Sign-up will remain open until August 15th of this year. If you do not want to wait for that pre-filled application, you can visit your local office, you can visit our website, you can apply there as well. Eligible producers must report their 2024 crop year planted and prevented planted acres to USDA. And if you have not done that, you just need to do it before the filing deadline. We are working on sending pre-filled applications to farmers who submitted your acreage reports already for 2024.
Deputy Undersecretary for Farm Production and Conservation, Brooke Appleton, speaking before a delegation of Midwestern Farm Bureau members this week at USDA headquarters. She says various online tools such as a payment calculator and FAQ sheet will also be part of the rollout for sign-up of up to $10 billion in payments under ECAP. I'm Rod Bain reporting in Washington, D.C.